Welcome back to Ward and L on Canada Talks. Let's get into hour number two.
Yay! I'm always excited when he stops by.
I know, for the first time in the new year.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Well, you know, it's just, it's that simple. He's a communications expert. He stops by here all the time. One of the smartest people we know. Please welcome from Evan Thompson and Associates, Mr. Evan Thompson.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Now, I don't remember. I know last time you were here, we talked in December. We talked a little bit about, you know, New Year's rezos.
Yes, yes.
Did you make any? I can't remember.
I just resolved to put better food in my mouth. I didn't try and, you know, make a claim to lose weight.
Right, right, yes.
It was sort of easy does it.
Yeah.
Not to set, you know, false expectations that will only lead in defeat and disappointment.
And how is that going for you?
Well, keeping the alterations person busy at the dry cleaners.
I'm in
and out all the time. And, you know, it's not a difficult thing to do. You just think about what you're ingesting, and then you realize the good that will come of it. Yeah. When all of a sudden you feel your clothes are so much looser.
Yeah.
And you're thinking more clearly.
The side effects are amazing, right? In terms of, like, you sleep better, you think easier. But more clearly, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's you don't get as fogged in the day, and there's all kinds of benefits.
I don't realize until January, and I think I did this last year too, but I don't realize until January how much junk we buy during the holidays that, you know, like first week of December, not so much, but this morning, as I was getting ready, threw out a bunch of holiday candies and cookies and things that people gave us, because people gave us tins of holiday cookies or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was so much of, Brett says, why didn't I bring it here to work? Because it's gone bad. That's what I mean. We got it in the last few weeks of the year.
But would you like a moldy cookie?
But that's what I mean. I opened up, you know, the tin. I ate a few out of it, and then it sat there, and I decided to eat better, eat healthier. And then finally I realized, oh my God, I still had all this. And so having it all and throwing it all out at once made me realize how much junk we bought, because it was cheap and it was on sale.
Did you put it in the compost? Just making sure.
But I couldn't believe how much of that. It's so easy, especially around the holidays, for us to buy this
junk and
put it in our mouth holes.
It's what we've always done. It's almost a part of morality. Our morality and our self-worth is judged by our ability to entertain friends and show respect and gifts at holiday time.
Yeah.
And if we boycott...
And the easiest way to do that is food.
Yeah, and boycotting the candy aisle is not really a popular move. Or boycotting the LCBO, that's not a popular move at holiday time.
No, you better not.
Now,
don't you dare talk about boycotting the LCBO, sir.
I was...
with my influence, who knows what might happen.
Them's fighting words, sir.
Do you know what I did? That is so... Listen, we all make mistakes. But I, like you, was very... you know, I don't make specific resolutions... And blah, blah, blah. And then the first week of January, like, I decided kind of on January 1st, I was like, no, I am going to make one specific resolution, and I've already wrecked it. And that was, I wanted to meditate every single day, because I go through streaks, right? I'm very up and down with my meditation practice. And so I was like, no, I'm going to every single day, 2017, that's the goal. I wrecked it.
Who told you that you might meditate every day? Was this your idea
or was it
someone else's idea?
It was my idea, because I realized that I don't like my lack of consistency with it. So I was like, well, here's a way to be consistent. I'm going to see if I can do it every single day of 2017. And then it didn't. And then I missed a day. And then I was like, well, now I wrecked the whole thing. So then I missed another day. And that was stupid.
Well, with resolutions...
Fix me, Evan!
I think resolutions require baby steps, not huge leaps.
Yeah, it was...
And if you say, I'm going to stop smoking or I'm going to give up alcohol right now at the strike of midnight, as January 1st comes in, that's really self-defeating. It sounds great and you can psych yourself up and you can surprise yourself. But these things take a lot of mental preparation and you need to see... the results of your labor and your commitment over time. It's like investing.
Oh, what an excellent way to put it.
Put a whack of money into an investment and expect a 10% return overnight. Mm. It's not going to happen, and it doesn't work with resolutions either.
And the other things that I just have been working on in my life and that I wanted to improve, all those things are going great. It was it was the one thing where I did it the wrong way. We had the whole conversation about it, and then I'm like, I'll just set this one and tank that one. But everything else is going very good. Well, so, you know, what are you going to do? Well, live and learn. Next year, hard, fast, no.
Well, speaking of like resolutions and things like that, I know tomorrow is Let's Talk Day, right?
No, that's next week.
Is it next week? I thought it was tomorrow. I'm sorry. So it is coming up, though.
Yeah.
And I was reading today something very interesting that maybe you can talk about a little bit there, Evan. That is... 11% of Canadians age 15 to 24 meet the criteria for depression, according to Stats Can.
Which is sad.
And we hear a lot about this time of year. We've talked about it this week, about seasonal affective disorder, and people get more depressed in the wintertime like this. That number actually doesn't surprise me. A lot of people said, wow, that seems high. And I said, no, I'm not surprised at that.
Yeah. I'm not either, especially for young people.
Yeah.
But... What can and should people do around, because, you know, work can be very stressful. Mm-hmm. And when you're depressed, often you don't want to go to work. You don't want to do anything. What do you have any tips and tricks or wisdom for the people?
Well, I think, you know, to see these patterns forming before they become tsunamis, I call them emotional tsunamis, where you cannot bear to go to work. You can't even think about work.
Yeah.
If someone asks you what you do for a living, you don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
That's when it's gone too far. I think when we recognize the initial signs, colleagues are getting on our case, we're losing patience. Mm. Our concentration isn't really up to snuff. We're not really sleeping properly because we're dreading going in. Then it's time to send out the SOS to either the HR department or a close friend or partner or someone who you trust and get their insights. Because ideally they know you, they know your role if it's in the workplace. And look to them for some ideas. I found, honestly, that having a conversation with someone about oneself, one's challenges, can be hugely rewarding and take a lot of heat off.
Yeah.
It's as if you've opened a little valve and you've decompressed, and that balloon all of a sudden that was ready to burst is now a little softer, but it's still floating around.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Which one indicator... that I've found helpful is my resentment levels. Because, for instance, like today, I'm really resenting my roommate, but that's just a one day. But I find that if I go through a phase where for like a week, I'm like, he never does anything. I do everything in this house. I go, wait a minute, why am I so irritated? And why do I think I'm the best and he's the worst? And it's usually that life is stressful and he's become the scapegoat. And that's when I know I have to pay attention to what I'm doing for myself and what I'm doing in my life, because now I'm blaming him for stuff that's not his fault, even though he should know where the cups go.
It's the devil's in the details. It's the little things that when roommates come to blows about or partners come to blows about, it's always the little things.
Yeah.
I lost a spoon in the kitchen. And
listen, he is always taking spoons to work and leaving them in his bag. And it makes me nuts. We only have like four. Okay, sorry.
This became quite the narrative over about 3 or 4 months. The speculation, where did that spoon go? And it became symbolic of the need to retain control, know where things are, know what's happening next, feel that you're really in sync with the other person, you're communicating with them. So if the other person is losing spoons and going off in all directions, cupboard doors open, etc., it gets to you because you feel that it's a slippery slope and you're starting to slide because you can't control the situation. And we all love to control our environment.
Yeah.
It's our nest. It's our cave.
But at the end of the day, how mad do I need to get about the cup being on the wrong shelf? Right? I probably don't need to get that mad about it.
You know, you might consider leaving a funny note.
We actually have a no note rule.
Oh, yeah, because that sort of short circuits conversation.
And notes generally, especially between roommates, tend to be passive aggressive.
But if they're funny.
Yeah,
and
but it's
you can
really
spin it
hard
in a way
to.
Yeah, because the context has to be completely clear and bang on. And if you start leaving notes, one note becomes six notes, and then it's a note everywhere for every minor indiscretion.
Yeah, so
and then
that's,
you're at each other's throats.
We kind of made the rule that if it's not something you can just say to the other person, don't write a note. Come on, you jerk. So that's, you know, because we have both found, we have lived with people who have left really annoying notes. So before we even read the note, if we see it, it's like our back goes up and it's like, what is this? So we're already mad. So we're going to read the note through a mad filter and we're going to read it in a tone. It might be meant in a funny tone. So it's more something that I have to go to him and go, look, I'm an insane person. So when the cup is on the wrong shelf, it makes me angry because I'm crazy. Could you just put the cup on the shelf with the other cups?
And having the conversation. And this translates into the workplace and mental health days.
Yes.
Where people feel they are not being heard. Mm-hmm. Their wishes aren't being respected. They're either being ignored or they're being taken advantage of. And so they get up one morning and say, I can't go in today. I just can't face my boss. I can't face my cubicle partner.
Yeah.
I just don't want to go in. And this resonates across the world. In the U.S., annually, there's between $500 and $600 billion of wasted productivity due to stress brought on by bad relationships in the workplace. And you may say, well, how could it get so bad? Quite simply, it's easier to hire one person and work them 80 hours a week than it is to hire two and work them 40 hours a week. Yeah. It's all economics.
And for the people doing the jobs, it is easier to stuff it in and stuff it down and not talk about it than risk getting in an argument with your cubicle mate or whatever. I think that's what a lot of people think. I think in the long run.
We used to be that way.
No,
it's true. We used to be that way.
Did you argue? Or did you just have disagreements?
Well, we would just wait till things exploded.
Yeah.
In the studio, on air?
Sometimes.
Very rarely on air, I think. But
maybe
because
once or
we're
twice.
Very good at like fighting during the commercial break and then coming back and being like, so Evan, like not in front of you, we wouldn't do it when you were here.
Yeah.
But we're very good at raging at each other during the commercial and then coming back on air and being like, so Ward, I noticed that this new study came out. but then, we had to learn
to communicate with each other better.
Yeah. Listen, we're getting there. We're not there, but we're getting there and we're working on it and we've acknowledged it. Right. Yeah. But I think for a lot of people, and in a lot of situations, and obviously the work we do is quite different. Mm-hmm. We have to talk to each other. Whereas I think for a lot of people, they would prefer to go in, sit at their desk, put their head down, and spend the whole day thinking about, like, if that guy talks to me one more time, I might punch him in the face and just go home and not address it. Because it is hard to address these things and to be calm about it.
Well, communication is so complex.
You know,
timing is everything. The medium is the message, as Marshall McLuhan said.
Yeah.
As you noted, we don't leave notes in our household.
Yeah.
We have face-to-face conversations.
Or else there'll be murders.
Or emails or nasty texts.
Yeah.
There's so many ways to communicate. And conversation in many instances is almost out the window. Certainly in the workplace, it's more difficult to really engage your boss in a calm, neutral, quiet setting where you have their attention, their full attention.
Especially depending on the boss, what your relationship with that boss is like. You know, some people have a very personal relationship with their boss, or they can say anything to. There's that kind of relationship. There's still a lot of businesses out there where the boss is a figure that you don't ever get to talk to, that, you know what I mean, that's locked away from you. Or
it's very difficult to feel. I mean, you don't have really the only relationship you have with them is superior and underling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
Again, we're very lucky that we have a boss that we can
talk to.
And sometimes we're almost too casual. But who he does his best to understand us, right? Whereas that's never happened to me before. I've never had that before, right? Yeah. And so boundaries. Again, are very difficult
shared,
to maneuver.
Yes, shared boundaries and shared work ethics. For example, I'm sure that a lot of the involuntary sporadic mental health days are as a result of the employee not seeing eye to eye with the boss. The boss may be an 80-hour a week person.
Yeah.
Or in some of the wealth management firms, New York City, 120 hours a week. That's the culture, that's the morality that they live by.
Which is?
So a millennial, a young person comes in, is fresh new hire, and runs up against the boomer who is, you know, the 80-hour a week person, or 45 hours a week, which is considered extreme.
Yeah.
And then immediately you have this gap. So what does the millennial do? Decides, I'm just going to pick my spots. Don't ask, don't tell. I can't talk to this person because we have different values, but I'm going to come in a little less often. I'm going to see if I can duck 2 days a week or 2 days and then look for another job 2 days a month.
Right. I was going to say 2 days a week, they might notice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you have a cardboard cutout. No, you would be
yeah,
gone.
Like you're using the HOV lane so you can you can drive in the high occupancy lane. You get yourself a little mannequin, you put it at your desk.
Well, we do have to take a break, Evan, but when we come back, I do want to talk about sort of what you think about mental health days. Are they beneficial? Are they not? Should we try to find coping ways to avoid them? Is it okay now and then? We're really going to dig in on this one.
Great.
We are joined by Evan Thompson, who is, of course, a communications expert, but really is an expert in productive business environments and human relations. And, of course, you can find out more about him at evanthompsonandassociates.com. And just stay tuned, because he's still going to be here when we get back.
Sounds good. This is Ward and Al. You're listening to Canada Talks. Stick around. She's under math.
You're listening to the number one duo in Canadian talk radio. This is Ward and L.
We are hanging out with Evan Thompson. He is a communications expert and the head of Evan Thompson and Associates. You can see them at evanthompsonandassociates.com. You know, we have Evan on every month. Love talking to him about different ways to make the business world better, how to make your work life better. And it's always interesting. We've been talking about mental health in the workplace and taking a mental health day, as
it were. Which I was mentioning during the break, Evan, people feel like this is a really new concept, but I remember when I was in high school, a girl that I would take the bus home with every day wasn't there one day. And the next day when I said, oh, were you sick yesterday? She said, no, my mom let me take a mental health day. And that was like in the, let's call it the late 90s. All right, it was like 1993.
We won't do any carbon dating.
Yeah. Don't do any math on that. But so it's interesting. It's kind of something that some people have put into practice for a long time.
I did a bit of reading on this before joining you today. And interestingly enough, mental health days were once meant in a whimsical way. A mental health day, mm-hmm. I believe, was coined by an elementary school teacher in the early 90s.
Oh, interesting.
Who said, I'm going to take, and here are the air quotes, mm-hmm. a mental health day. And it was long before the ravages of work stress mm-hmm. have appeared. I mean, we read about it in the armed forces and the daily, you know, reports about incidents of bipolar disorder and mental illness. Mm-hmm. A mental health day now is serious business.
Yeah.
I believe you asked me before the break, do I agree with them? Absolutely. I think mm-hmm. they are essential.
Yeah, it is. That's absolutely interesting. It started as a, well, I'm taking a sick day, but I'm not actually sick. So we'll call it a mental health day. I'm going to have fun. Whereas now it's more like, I'm so stressed out, I need a day.
So much of, you know, the how you take a mental health day depends on your relationship with your superiors, you know, with your boss.
Yeah.
If you have the sort of relationship where you can say, we're all under stress here, I need to take a day off a month that doesn't count as a sick day or a vacation day. And assuming you're doing your job mm-hmm. and you have a good relationship with your boss, that should work.
Yeah.
This gets a little easier as people work remotely.
Yes.
Assuming they're not being wired and monitored, you know, on camera as they make their way around their house doing anything but working, mm-hmm. they can find that rest and that relaxation at home.
Yeah.
But for those who need to report 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, it's a very, very difficult situation if you don't have a relationship with your team, with your boss.
Or you don't work in a job that cares. Because let's be honest, there's a lot of jobs out there that people do that where it's, you know, corporations can often, the way the rules are handed down, they don't make a lot of room for a mental health
day. They make no room. Interestingly enough, I was sort of amazed to read that Henry Ford, perhaps the greatest entrepreneur of all time, decided to cut the 48-hour work week down to 40 hours mm-hmm. because he mm-hmm. felt he wasn't getting his return on capital, return on investment from his employees.
Yeah, they needed that, time to recharge.
Yeah, line workers are more productive if they're not worked that way.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I just want to say there's a study that came out last summer from K. Anders Ericsson, which is one of the top experts on the psychology of work. What I found interesting was new studies show that experts are recommending a 4-day work week should be the national average. That it turns out that a 40-hour work week, 5 days a week, it's arbitrary. We just came up with it. And yeah, Henry Ford was one of the people to start with that. Used to be that North Americans worked 6 days a week. We only took off 1 day a week. And then people started to pull back to 2 days a week, and that became a thing we do. But it turns out the 5-day work week, 8 hours a day, it's arbitrary. There is no, there was no psychology put behind it. There was no need for it. They say the average business in North America, unlike, except if it's like retail or service oriented, but the average business gets all of its work done by Thursday anyway. And that you're most productive 32 hours a week, that you don't actually need 40 hours. They say the average business person working 8 hours a day really only works, 5 hours of their day. And that we've just we've just always kept it at a 5-day work week when it's not necessary. Productivity is so high in North America, and so much is still, as we've talked about, automation, that we're working this extra day we don't need to. What do you think?
I agree. I think, you know, on a Friday, on that magic fifth day, the connectivity between, you know, clients and their service providers, you know, dips. I mean, lawyers and their clients, financial advisors and their clients. I find in my business, it's not a dead day for me, but it certainly isn't as busy as the other days during the week when people are more focused on getting the work done.
Yeah.
And I do see the time when a 4-day work week will become official. I often wish that I, when I was an employee, I worked in France. In France, it's law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
31 days minimum a week is
Wait, 31 off. Days a week?
31 days a year.
Yes.
Is taken off by employees. People who work in the civil service.
The only, I mean, again, the only exception to that and what we see a lot is, again, the one person doing the job of two people.
Yeah.
And so I know that at a lot of companies, yes, someone gets laid off or someone quits or someone gets fired and never gets replaced. And now we have one person who is expected to do the job of two, and therefore 40 hours a week is never actually enough. Yeah. And so that's an unfortunate byproduct of, and it's interesting to me because when you look at there are some companies, although I think they're few and far between, that like Henry Ford looked and went, oh, you know what? We're not getting the most productivity working more hours. And it's interesting to me that companies think they're saving money by doing this, but really people just get burnt out. Maybe the job is getting done, but probably not that well, probably not that efficiently. You're not getting value for your money.
Absolutely. Although there is the perception.
Yes.
That more productivity comes from more hours logged.
Yeah.
But
and also the perception that you're saving money. So if you just look at the numbers, it might look like that. But then when you look at the quality of output and you look at the quality of, yeah, of the work being done, you go, oh, well, this used to be better. Now we kind of look worse in some areas, whereas our bottom line looks better. It's a weird thing.
Of all the first world nations, Canada and the U.S. are the most overworked for their time. We take less vacation than the rest of the world. We take less time for lunch than the rest of the world. I mean, even if you go to parts of Europe where they're taking off 2 hours a day for their lunch to go home and have a nice lunch with their families and then come back to work, that's where they're starting to practice this idea of a 5-hour work week as opposed to eight. And they're finding that they're... What did I say?
5-hour week.
Are we all off on...
None of us can accurately do time framing,
yes.
Today.
But a 5-hour workday, they're already kind of practicing that, and they're showing that their productivity isn't going down. In fact, it's improving because morale is improving. There's something to be said about that, how it improves morale. In France, it's now illegal to email anybody after work hours.
Outside of work hours,
A boss cannot email someone or contact them outside of work hours. It's actually illegal now.
Now, Evan, to get back to the concept of mental health days, you know, so if this isn't something that your workplace is overly supportive of, and so it does mean that if you're going to take a mental health day, it means calling in sick. It means using up one of your sick days. What suggestions do you make to people to know when you're at the point where you should do that? Because I think for a lot of people, those sick days are carefully counted and usually saved for when you're legitimately sick. And what other things than taking a sick day could people do?
when you're contemplating a sick day, assuming that you have some time to think about it and plan it, it's not wise just to hop out of bed and then hop back into bed and say, I'm not going in, and then let your team down and cause havoc with your work schedule. Have a goal or a target or some idea of how you're going to spend this precious resource, this mental health day. Are you going to spend it with family? Are you going to spend it at a museum, at a gallery? You're going to do something completely non-work related? A lot of people feel tremendous guilt because they're not going in. They feel they're not producing. They're doing nothing. They're just sitting around. That can lead to more problems than if they went in and faced the environment. And you may say, well, how so? Basically, you may find yourself tackling tasks at home that you loathe. Cleaning out the garage, cleaning out the eavesdrops, spending a day.
Which doesn't make
doing penance.
Yeah.
Because you feel guilty about not going in.
And that's not helping your psyche.
Absolutely. Yeah. So sick days don't take shape by themselves. You have to shape them in a way that benefits you and brings you comfort, joy, calm.
You know, that's... In June, I went through depression, and we're very lucky here in that the amount of vacation time we are given is very generous. And also, I'm surrounded by a team that is understanding and a boss that is understanding. So I was able to say, you know, I'm going to take a week off. And it was out of my vacation time, but again, didn't penalize me, right? Because we get ample. And Ward was able to get guest hosts. But what I did in that week was I made plans of how I was going to do self-care to get my mental state back into a strong way. So for instance, I did float tanks. And if you're in a place, and I think it's probably only, you know, kind of bigger cities that have float places, but I could be wrong about that. But if you're in a place and you're super stressed out, boy, do I recommend a float. It is a bit price prohibitive in that it's about $45 for an hour. But I will tell you, man, that is one quality hour of mental health restoration. But so, you know, I did that. I spoke with my therapist. I made sure I meditated every day. I made sure I wasn't hard on myself. I was gentle, like all that kind of stuff. And so I made that plan so that week wasn't just a week of me not having to focus on responsibilities that added stress and, you know, but also that I was actively doing things to try to support my mental state so that I could feel like I was giving my best work. And again, I'm in a very lucky position that I had that week to take, right? But yes, so a mental health day, if you can take it, make some plans for what you're going to do that's good for you. Yet not just like, well, I guess I'll get caught up on, because my house is also a mess. Leave the house a mess for a day and do something that enriches you.
You know, the decision to take a mental health day for many people requires a lot of courage.
Yeah.
You're saying, I've had enough.
And I'm worth taking care of in this state.
I'm worth it. Yeah. Exactly.
Listener Blair says, North America has the mentality of live to work while other countries are work to live.
Yeah.
There is something to be said about that. We are, I do believe it, that we're overworked in North America. And I find that interesting. And you see that so much when we talk about like raising the minimum wage and people go, just go get a second job. I go, we're already working plenty.
We think that people who are driven, we think those are enviable traits, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, look at, oh, this guy works 120 hours a week. Man, he's really going after the American dream or the Canadian dream, or he's really chasing something instead of going, wow, what is his quality of life? And is he happy? And is he going to have a heart attack tomorrow? We don't look at the quality of life necessarily of the people who are working these insane hours. We go, good for them, because you know what success is? Money. That's sad.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can I play you guys this audio? This is about this, what we're talking about. This was in 2014, Cadillac ran this commercial. And they ended up having to pull it. They ended up having to pull it, and they couldn't play it anywhere else. So
why do we work so hard? For what? For this? For stuff? Other countries, they work, they stroll home, they stop by the cafe, they take August off. Off. Why aren't you like that? Why aren't we like that? Because we're crazy, driven, hard-working believers, that's why.
Oof.
Those other countries think we're nuts. Whatever. Were the Wright brothers insane? Bill Gates, Les Paul, Ali. Were we nuts when we pointed to the moon? That's right. We went up there, you know what we got? Bored. So we left. Got a car up there, left the keys in it. Do you know why? Because we're the only ones going back up there, that's why. But I digress.
It's awful.
It's pretty simple. Yep. You work hard, you create your own luck, and you gotta believe anything is possible.
Oh, gross.
As for all the stuff,
yeah.
That's the upside of only taking 2 weeks off in August.
No. They did the perfect casting for it. It's that blonde guy with the super blue eyes that you, anyway, he's in everything. He looks sort of like an evil villain. He plays an evil villain a lot of time. Anyway, I'll look up his name later. But that is...
Listen to that commercial.
And it's sad, but that's how they tap into that. Listen, that's a very smart commercial because we have been sold that concept in North America. Whereas if you work yourself to the bone, that's you moving up the ladder, when in fact that's a lie in most cases.
Why do you think that commercial was pulled? I have an idea.
I'm honestly
a clear
surprised.
Idea why?
I'm honestly surprised it was pulled.
They ran it for a while.
But
okay.
But I hate it, and it makes me feel really angry because it's a lie. But well, also, we weren't first to space, and we didn't go back to the moon because nobody wants to fund NASA. Not because we got bored.
There's a huge shaming element.
Oh, very shaming.
In that, and that shame can be blown off if you aspire to driving the vehicle or living like others who do drive the vehicle.
Yeah.
And so there's a huge consumeristic piece.
Well, but and
consumption.
And what makes me sad is the people who do buy into that and who do talk about, we have a lot of listeners who are right wing. And so we have American listeners that don't believe in Obamacare and don't believe in universal health care. And it's that citing of, if you want it, you just have to work hard enough to get it. And anyone who doesn't have it isn't working hard and is lazy. And it's not true. And it's a lie that they've been sold. And that commercial makes me sad because it's using that lie to sell you a car, but a lot of people already believe it, and it is shameful.
Well, the people, you know, feel shamed, and they don't feel great about themselves because their accomplishments are dwarfed by Bill Gates, who is really a metaphor for success. And
not everyone, by the way, is physically and mentally capable of working 120 hours a week. And that's not something that should be shameful. That's not something that should be shameful. If I tried to work 120 hours a week, I would have another nervous breakdown and I would kill myself.
I also think Bill Gates would tell you.
So I'm not going
to
try.
I think Bill Gates would tell you to take more time off.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever heard Bill Gates say bury yourself in work.
I don't think.
You know? But this is what I mean.
And by the way, Bill Gates wasn't in a situation where the different people have different struggles. So if you're working three jobs to make ends meet, you're not in a situation where you're going to be able to buy a Cadillac from your 120-hour work week.
Mm-mm.
It's a false...
The payout isn't there.
Yeah.
The payout is presented and it's suggested that if you work hard and you live the dream, it will come to you.
Yeah.
And hard work is almost part of our morality.
Yeah.
If you don't work hard,
you're a bad person.
Why do you think so many people of an age take offense if you ask them if they're planning their retirement or if they have retired?
Yeah.
Some of them get really obstreperous and say, I'm never going to retire. I'm going to be carried out of here. Because that's how they define their value to themselves and their families.
Right.
And this is what they have ascribed to all their lives.
Yeah.
This is them. So take away my job and I'm lost.
Yeah.
We got to go. I'm going to leave you with Heather says, my father's working generation drank alcohol on the job instead of getting those mental health days.
100%.
Yeah. True. Wow,
things were very different.
Yeah. Especially for the air traffic controllers.
That I know a guy that worked for GM. Mm-hmm. And he complains about when they stopped letting them drink on the job. And we're talking, it was overlooked. The rules weren't enforced. And we're talking like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because if you worked longer, listen, it's after 5, you're supposed to be out of here. Have a beer while you do that stuff.
Yep.
Evan Thompson, can we say that the basic lesson is take care of your mental health, take a mental health day if you can and you need one, but plan it and don't just use it as a day to punish yourself.
Exactly. And see it as a sign that you need to talk to someone. You need to reach out. There is no shame in seeking a qualified opinion.
And being stressed out doesn't mean that you're weak and lazy.
Precisely.
EvanThompsonAndAssociates.com for more advice from this lovely human being. And of course, you will be back in a few weeks to keep helping us get better.
I shall. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, buddy.
We will be back to check in with our own Jamie Sturgeon right after this. You're listening to Ward Now, Channel 167, Canada Talks.